All right. And now we'll hear from the Box Made Up people. And that is a funny name. It was the first thing we all think of. And we went through last week how they got it. And that doesn't really matter. What matters is that you can find them if you need some technology consulting. We've been using them now for pushing 2 years and have been extremely happy. They're very professional, very thorough, but more important, they're very tailored. Different people, different companies have different needs, different types of backup, different types of how fast you have to do things. They'll tailor it to you so you're not spending any more money than you have to, nor are you cutting corners where you shouldn't be.
Right.
So let's take it away to Louisa and David, and we'll let them talk a little bit about the mess that Yahoo has created.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for that introduction. And, you know, and Stephen really was exact there. BoxMeta, we are about customized IT. No two solutions look alike. It's about going in, assessing the business, growth plans, industry requirements, and then creating a plan for you. BoxMeta, we're an outsourced IT company, which means that we manage your IT on a day-to-day basis. We monitor it and make sure that everything is stable, secure, and that you are following best practices.
And what's your motto? The one I love?
Stress-free IT.
You got it.
That's right. We answer the phone every time. So if you are having a problem, you pick up the phone and you call and somebody always answers. Don't you hate it when you have a problem and, you know, you're in that moment of panic and you call and you get voicemail? I mean, that's, you know.
Like the IRS?
No, exactly. Nobody likes that. And at BoxMeta, we don't like that either. So you call, you get a person every time. We have a range of expertise, everything from administration to engineering and everything in between. So we've got the knowledge. And we're not only just a service company, but we're a consulting organization as well. So if you do have an IT department, we work with your IT department to fill in on projects or where they may need some additional resources. So
phone number and email?
229-0922. And email is info@boxmeta.com.
Thank you. All right. Yahoo made a big, big, big blunder. When and what does it mean and what are we doing about it? Take it away.
I'll let you take it away.
David?
Well, from a customer standpoint, obviously change your password if you have a Yahoo account. You should have received an email.
I did, so I know that that part is working.
You know, notifying you, but if you haven't checked or, you know, lost it in spam, who knows it these days. You know, verify that you're not using that password anywhere else that you used previously at Yahoo that might have been compromised. And at the same time, change your password. Update any security settings that you may have answered that they've requested you change. And also, I would recommend turn on two-factor authentication.
And can you explain to some people who are maybe not quite as computer savvy exactly what that means?
Two-factor simply means you have an alternate way of authenticating yourself in addition to your password. For the Yahoo sake, I believe it's SMS. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure entirely how Yahoo does it.
I put it on in reaction to this on my own Yahoo account.
So you enter your cell phone. So every time you log in from a new device, they will all double authenticate you from your cell phone by texting you a code, which you will have to enter.
And if that code doesn't get sent back,
yeah,
nobody gets
no
in,
access
right?
granted. Perfect. So, you know, in general, any site that you use for anything critical, you know, confidential, has any information that you feel you wouldn't want compromised, you should turn on two-factor. Most, you know, reliable vendors these days have some sort of two-factor authentication mechanism, whether it's Google authentication or some app you put on your cell phone or an SMS text. So that's generally the best practice you should do. I know Google, the Microsofts, you know, the Yahoos, they all support it. Maybe not, you haven't maybe have enabled it, but you should. You
but
should do
there.
That right away.
Yeah, it's a free app. The Authenticator is a free app that you can get on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm. As far as the hack goes, you have to realize now that your email address is now in the hands of, you know, potentially malicious intent. So you're most likely going to start receiving messages now with phishing attacks, with tricking you from friends. Maybe if they've seen your address book or people you've previously sent to, it'll appear to come from people you know. So you have to be even more aware now of the risks that are out there.
And let me just interject there very quickly, because people that I've spoken to a person's email does not need to be hacked in order for a hacker to send you a message to try to trick you. They
Correct.
Can right. So your friend's email doesn't have to be hacked in
they
order for you
spoof.
To they spoof the address. So
it's very easy to make it appear to have come from someone you know when it really didn't. And, you know, usually if you have a good spam filter, it'll kind of alert you of that fact.
Is this worth getting a new email account and phasing out your old one?
It's really up to you. I mean, obviously, if you want to start over, it's safer. But then most people would probably have how many accounts linked to that email address. Mm-hmm. You know, you might shop at, you know, Amazon or some other websites, and they're all linked to your Yahoo account, and that's where all your receipts go and your purchase orders and your, you know, tracking numbers. And
I started that process, and you're right, it's very complicated.
So I don't know if I'd go through that pain. I would at least change my password, get a good password manager. We talked about that.
Yahoo suggested to me, as part of this mass you've been breached thing, that I just stop using security questions. What are your thoughts on that?
There's been some new studies out that pretty much show they're pointless. Most people make those answers easily recoverable, in a sense, like where did you go to high school or what was your first car? And they're easy to guess, and a lot of people use things that are on their Facebook page.
Yeah, I was going to say they go to your Facebook page
so,
and learn all the answers.
Or your LinkedIn account. So if it's publicly available, it's not a good question. So they've pretty much, you know, through studying that, it doesn't matter. You should have a password manager, use unique passwords per site, and, you know, follow the best practices.
And similar to that, actually, NIST just came out a few months ago as well, and they said that even changing your password frequently is not as important as having a complex password. So
you actually mentioned that last mm-hmm. week. Yeah. I was kind of taken aback by that.
People are more likely to have or create a more complex password if they know that they don't have to change it. Once you know that you have to change it every 90 days, you get lazy and you say, oh, you know, let me just throw something together.
Good point.
But if you know, hey, this is going to be here to stay, then you're going to use, okay. And one of the things we talk about is don't just use a word or just even random letters, create a phrase. And now when you create phrases, you can now implement characters and you can actually use different strategy that's much more difficult to crack. And if you know that that's not going to change, you're going to be more likely to do that. And don't use the same password for every site. And that goes back to this Yahoo breach, you know.
Yeah, I actually took that advice. I got it from you folks, but not on the show. But I went to one of my more protective sites, I guess, and did actually use a phrase. And I never realized, I guess, that you could have a password that long.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But if you're going to have one that long, how great is it to have one that you can remember?
Right.
That is that long?
Yeah.
That was kind of a unique approach to me. Okay, well, after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more things from sort of an order of stupidity. Number one, let's go right to the top. Talk about debit cards. Debit cards are awful, 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 awful things. If you have one, cut it in pieces, throw it away, burn it, do something. If your kids have one, get it back.
Especially.
People, don't be afraid of credit cards, but be deathly afraid of debit cards. Tell us a little more, if you would.
I mean, we were talking at the break. There is some false sense of security, I think. People think that the FDIC will protect me. Well, no, the FDIC is there to protect the bank against liquidity. The FDIC is not there to protect you if your email account got hacked and somebody was able to reset your bank password and take your money. There might be some exceptions, you know, credit unions and such, or some other private organizations may have, you know, some insurance or some recourse, but in a broad state, you know, in a broad sense, your bank is not covered. So what can you do? I mean, one of the things we talked about here as well is isolate your funds. Anything that is going to be for a transactional nature, create an account that is just for those funds. It could be in the same bank account. I mean, in the same bank, but just a different account. Ideally, a different bank altogether would be great, but we understand, obviously, that's the next step. So there are ways to insulate yourself. And like Steven said, debit cards are, you know, you give your debit card away, you hand it off to somebody in a restaurant or If it's breached, it's direct access to your funds, and it's unlike a credit card where you have recourse. So this is one of the things that you can do.
What about sites like PayPal?
PayPal have their own security statements. And so, I mean, I know that we had, you know, one incident a couple of years ago, and I've known several people that have had PayPal breaches, and they've always recovered their funds within just a few days. So PayPal, I think, similar to credit cards, they have...
PayPal usually will guarantee their transactions.
Okay, right? So if you link your bank account and send someone money and somehow that's breached, they have some insurance type that will
exactly.
get your money back.
But still, I would recommend that if you're going to link an account to PayPal, make it an account that you've isolated just for online transactions. Do not have your major checking or savings account linked to PayPal, because you never know, PayPal could get breached.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, they only are accessing the funds that you use for that transaction. So if you need to buy something from PayPal and transfer $500 to that account, make the payment, and this way you only have your $500 at risk. If you're going to link to your major bank account, you know, that's insane. Like he said, you shouldn't be doing that.
And you were just telling us that you had a little personal experience with an online gaming site.
Yes, for those of you
okay,
that have
parents,
teenagers out there,
listen.
My 16-year-old, you know, credit card, so you know, limited risk, I guess. So I gave him my credit card to use on his Steam account, and I'm sure for all of you parents out there with teenagers, you're very familiar with Steam. It is a gaming platform, and so what they were tricking kids basically that as they were playing the game, they were incurring transaction costs for whatever, I don't know, buying some sort of, you know, I guess if they would use a certain feature or use a certain whatever, I don't know. There were these charges that were being incurred and they never knew. And so we get the bill and it's $400 and some odd one day. And I call my son down and I'm not very happy. And he says, Mom, I have no idea what this is.
They didn't tell me?
They didn't tell. He says, I don't know. He goes, I really don't know where these charges are coming from or why. I didn't authorize anything on the game. And so we called Steam, and of course, it's a black hole. You can't find anybody, and for, you know, so there's nothing to do there. So I called American Express, and they reversed it. But lesson learned is that now my son, there's no more credit card on his Steam account. He goes to Walgreens on his own with his money, and he buys himself $50 prepaid cards as he needs them, and he puts those into the game. So,
all right, let's talk in general about parents. If you have a kid in college or are considering sending a kid to college, what are you going to do? You want the kid to have some access. It's absolutely necessary to have a kid have some access. How do you protect yourself?
I mean, I think I'll let Dave talk about it, but I think it's everything we've already kind of covered here is create an account just for him that you only fund with a very limited you know, on some sort of schedule.
And you don't have a debit card.
No debit cards.
I believe in credit cards. I mean, I was in college a long time ago, but, you know, they have minimums. They usually have programs for college students. They may not have a high credit limit, but they're enough to get by, you know. And if parents pay the bill, so they'll still have, say, a $500, $750 rotating credit line, which, you know, in college when it's $4 pizza and
yeah, so they,
you know, you can get far on that, you know.
When your card gets declined at 3 a.m. when the pizza guy comes.
that $4 pizza is probably now $8.
But that's right,
yeah,
that's right.
But, I mean, there's always deals for college students, right? So, but, yeah, I mean, I think if you get them a basic credit card, get their credit history started, I personally believe that's the right way to go.
And you are
avoid
fans.
Debit cards.
Yeah, you are fans of the prepaid credit card, right?
Yes.
Sure, yeah. I know American Express does I think they do a student card. It's like $500, and it's not a credit card, though.
And incidentally.
But it's due it every month.
Yeah, incidentally, on cards like that. That's really good for developing a credit history.
Mm-hmm.
If you teach a kid how to use a prepaid card and the kid's responsible, it shows credit and payment, credit and payment, credit mm-hmm. and payment. A lot of kids come out of college. They basically don't exist from the mm-hmm. credit mm-hmm. files. What happens, you go to try to buy a car, buy a home or something like that, they look at you and say, who are you?
Yeah, there's no history.
Everything's under mom. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Adam, what do you do? What did you do in college? Do you remember?
I had the only credit card I had was a gasoline card. So that wasn't real useful outside of the gas station. And I had a debit card. I didn't really use it. My job at the time, I bartended, so I made a lot of cash. and I just paid for everything in cash. That was the easiest way to do it.
Plus, you're just old enough now, and I'll remind everybody that he has a big birthday coming up pretty soon. He's just...
I don't want to think about that.
He's just old enough that this issue wasn't nearly as prevalent because there wasn't internet everywhere you went. There weren't smartphones in everybody's pocket. Nowadays, you can get your pocket picked without anybody picking your pocket. That's the weird part. They just do it electronically.
Very true. I mean, I think that's a good entry point into maybe if we wanted to go into public Wi-Fi a little bit and just...
That's a very good point.
And using mobile devices, which... are no longer just something that you hold in your hand. I mean, now we're all walking around with, you know, these smartwatches and, you know, all the wristbands and all the other gadgets that are connected to your mobile devices. So you are sort of like a walking signal and, you know, you just kind of bounce around and you jump from public Wi-Fi to public Wi-Fi. So I'll let Dave talk about that, but we can't emphasize strong enough, just similar to what we're saying about, you know, debit cards and just avoid public Wi-Fi as much as possible, except for just truly casual type purposes. So Dave, talk about public Wi-Fi a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's everywhere.
We pretty much recommend to our clients that if you're going to use Wi-Fi, you know, you bring it with you. Make sure it's something you brought with you, you know, a hotspot on your cell phone, a separate hotspot, or something that you trust. If it's free, you don't know if it's actually that place that put that up. There could be someone sitting in the airport with a rogue Wi-Fi that just says, you know, Jacksonville Airport.
You have no idea.
And then you connect, and now you're on their Wi-Fi, and they're capturing all the data going through their access point in your device.
There's keyboard readers. They can read what you're typing on your keyboard.
So there's a lot of scary things out there, and, you know, we can... go nitty-gritty into little details, but in general, just avoid public Wi-Fi unless it's absolutely necessary.
And yet nobody does that. What happens when you go to Starbucks? Everybody's in the Starbucks.
Somebody could be in the parking lot and make it look like you're connected to Starbucks Wi-Fi, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Same thing in hotels, and we'll talk about that,
too. It's not as uncommon as you think.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We were talking about on the break. This one blew my mind. The new Trojan horse. Tell us about that. We're talking about small business. This is such a classic.
Keyboard.
The keyboard.
Yeah, there's apparently the wireless keyboards out there, the non-Bluetooth ones specifically. There's several of them that are vulnerable to radio frequency. So you can predict based on, I guess, frequency. I don't know the technical details, but they're able to identify the keystrokes that you're typing. So there's compromises out there that have been Trojan horses sent in, say, flower deliveries in a vase, and they have a little device in it, and it picks up keystrokes from the keyboards. So
no flower deliveries to the office. That's it.
That's just nuts.
And, you know, if governments do it more in appliances, like they will intercept items from customs and modify them. And if it plugs into the wall, say a printer or something, well, now it's got power and it might have a radio in it or something so it can run for as long as need be.
It's unbelievable.
So there's some crazy devices out there.
The real estate people were talking on the show ahead of ours about the trouble people go through to defraud mortgage holders and things like that. And I was thinking, listening to it on the way in, if all that energy and talent could be harnessed for good causes, what people
imagine
like
what
that,
we could do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're inventing something where they take it into the office like it's a basket of flowers and it's got 30 days of keyboard stealing in it and they're doing key logging and get everything out of it.
Yeah.
And what kind of genius, evil genius, is that? And couldn't we redirect it?
China? No, I don't know.
It's just, it blows my mind. Anyway, anyway, Adam was asking Louisa and David about what makes them different / better than other people. You go... the term I used after our brief chat was weak link theory or weakest link theory. And tell us what that means, if you would.
Absolutely. I'll start it off. Okay. You know, network security and process, it is just that. It's an entire process. It's not just one thing. It's not just...
It's
not just a piece of hardware. You know, Dave's analogy is I can put the best lock on the door, but if I leave it open, it doesn't matter. So that's the weakest link theory. And so Boxmeda's approach is about it's a full process. So yes, we come in and we implement the best network security for your business. And it's everything from the firewall, well, how do I recover and what's my retention requirement so that if my, you know, staff member or somebody might do something, not, you know, not intentionally, obviously, but if something should happen, well, then how do I recover or what is my, what's my plan? So it's what you do on the front end, but it's also what you do on the back end. And it's around education. It's around what we do on a day-to-day basis. Our staff is in the office every day, constantly checking metrics, checking reports. We're checking your antivirus, which is managed in a centralized way. So we've got a dashboard that shows us constantly what's happening on your network. So it's really a process that's not just to set it and forget it, but it's set it, monitor it, watch it, change it as needed, consult with your client, educate, have have cyber meetings. I'm always in the offices of clients, you know, even when I'm on the phone, just talking to them about something that may not even be related. If the opportunity comes up, you know what, talk about whatever, you know, whatever you think is critical, you know, maybe something new has come up. So it's just this constant education. So it's around process. One of the examples of that might be is, and I know we've done that for Van Wee, is USB devices, flash devices. Okay. Lock down your flash, you know, your USB ports on your computers. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest.
Something I never would have thought of.
That's it. I mean, it's not uncommon. If you were to find a USB flash drive, and by you, I mean, maybe you're an employee of company XYZ.
Yeah, want to see if there's anything on it or if it's free to use.
65 or 70% of people that find a flash drive in the parking lot of their company will plug that flash drive into their computer. Now, how easy is it to grab a logo of a company that's in that building?
The number actually goes up if you put a logo.
If you put a logo on it, it's like 98% of people will grab a flash drive and put it into their computer. Now, your staff member wasn't doing anything maliciously. They thought they were being a good Samaritan. Hey, let me go find who this belongs to and give it back to them.
It might be pictures of their kids. You know,
exactly.
They lost forever.
Exactly. So that's just an example of, again, the process and things that you can do. Email phishing. And I'll let Dave go into the whole, I mean, we can do an entire show on just phishing alone.
Well, in general, I mean, just to sort of start over somewhat, we do an entire risk assessment. So,
well, and that's something that we did this year.
We did an audit.
Right, we did an audit. Yep.
Yeah, we're going to do an annual security audit. We document it. Being in the financial business, this has become a big deal for the compliance people.
Yeah, FINRA and SEC.
But even if it doesn't matter to FINRA or SEC, you should do this in your own business. Mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of business
at night.
It is.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on.
Yeah, we do a complete risk assessment catered to your business. You know, some environments might have different requirements, but in general, it covers most of the areas that you would expect, like physical security, you know, controls on data. You shouldn't have the entire office have access to every file on the network. How do people access machines remotely? You know, what data leaves the building on laptops? Are you encrypting those things or should you be? And we go through all those steps from front to back. I mean, we have a whole giant checklist of things we check. But in general, you have to kind of do that initially because you'll have a lot of aha moments. You know, and maybe you're putting client data on a website. Some companies like yours have client portals. Mm-hmm. Log in and look at your financial data. Well, have you tried to see how easy it is to compromise that website and get in? Have you done a penetration test? Have you done a risk assessment on that environment? So where I might have another business that's a nonprofit, they don't really have that. So we don't do that piece. So it's case by case. But in general, risk assessment, do you have an incident response process and procedure? You will have an attempt at a breach. You will get a ransomware email. Somebody might click on it.
I think we have 5 minutes left.
You know,
why don't we go
react
into ransomware a little bit?
So yeah, ransomware is
a topic. Yep.
Ransomware is the most common thing we see today. It's very easy to get an email from someone.
Just tell people what it is briefly.
Briefly, they encrypt the data on your network and they...
Usually through email or it could be a flash
drive. Usually through an email, a link or a document or a website. Almost all the time it involves someone clicking on something they shouldn't have opened. So it'll encrypt your data and it'll hold it ransom for usually bitcoins. We've had several clients do that on their home computers. We've had a couple do that internally, even after going through cybersecurity seminars. So
these emails are so
they're very good. Sophisticated.
They're so sophisticated.
So that leads into you should have very good backup and recovery of your data. Because I believe that it's very easy for ransomware to get in.
Is it usually just data they steal, or do they just lock you down?
They don't steal it. They just encrypt it, so it's useless. And
they padlock it.
Most small businesses, you know, bigger, larger firms tend to have recovery systems in place. They may not be ideal, but most smaller businesses think that, you know, oh, I have it. It's got on a drive on my, you know, a USB drive or a hard drive, and that gets encrypted as well because it's attached to the computer. They got infected, so they essentially lose their file system and their backups. Hmm. So you need to have offsite backups. And I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but in general, you have to have a valid backup recovery and retention plan. How far back do I need to go and be able to recover? And that's where most companies lack in the small business space.
And that's the case with ransomware. That's your best defense is, okay, well, hey, you know, I'm being held ransom for Bitcoin, but hey, I've got a backup from last night. Forget the Bitcoin. I'm just going to recover from last night and I'm free to go.
You still need to do the other, you know, the other security measures, you know, firewalls, antivirus, things like that.
But with regard to phishing, the last thing I'll say,